I don't want to set the world.
Because I learned about kids jumping on my lap, and I've loved kids jumping on my lap.
To chase, at least for a moment, Trump and the maggots off the stage.
The fact is, we had four dead Americans. Was it because of a protest, or was it because of guys out for a walk one night who decided they'd go kill some Americans? What difference at this point does it make?
We are the Prepper Broadcasting Network.
Wow, would you believe it? It's been 2 weeks since I last put up a podcast episode, and I'm sorry about that. Life has been truly busy, but hey, yeah, I'm here now, right? I'm here right now in this moment, joining you at home, in your garden, in your car, in your truck, what have you. Hello, everybody out there in Cyberverse. This is your boy, L. Douglas Hogan. So glad you could join me today. I just want to say that here's what's been going on in my life. Okay, you all know, in case I haven't shared it yet, I retired. I retired September 1st, 2023, from 25 years of service as a state employee. In that 25 years, there's a 10-year segment where I did law enforcement. 7 years straight through, and then I left for a couple years, and then I came back for a couple years. So there's 10 years in there. Between 2006, 2007, when I became a police officer, until about 2017, when I stopped policing. I really enjoyed that work, but there came a point when I retired that I was just pretty much done with law enforcement, because I took a promotion at my state job. And in that promotion, you all know, if you've ever supervised before, there's a lot of irons you put in the fire. And a person that is supervising, especially if you're on day shift, in a day shift position, and there's just the go, 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 and the hustle, you're constantly hustling and bustling all day long, and not just for yourself, but you're supervising a couple hundred employees at the same time and making sure that the workplace is just logistically and security wise just functioning properly. And you go home at the end of the day and you're just burned out. And that's one of the reasons why I stopped the policing thing, because I was policing after that kind of a shift. And I did it when I was on second shift. I was doing that policing on day shift, and when I was supervising on day shift, I was policing on second shift, and I also would police on the weekends. Well, after a while I just became burnt out. I had too many logs in the fire, so I stopped. Well, in 2023, just this last September, I retired from 25 years of state service, and I left in about a month and a half. I put in for some jobs. I turned down four jobs that weren't offering me what I wanted. I was looking for part-time employment. I wanted to take days off whenever I wanted to take off. I wanted to set my own schedule. And so some opportunities came and I turned them down because they weren't quite what I wanted. Where they work, yes, were they good jobs for the most part, but I don't want a job where I'm working straight seconds, being retired for 10-hour shifts or straight seconds with Mondays and Tuesdays off. It's just not what I was looking for. So I went to the area, one of the local police departments here, close to where I live, and I applied, and I got a notice right off the bat. And it's a laid back community. You know, the people I've met have been good. They've been sociable, really get along. I feel like I really click with the employees that are there. Get along quite nicely with them. So hired on with the police department. And when you've been out of policing in Illinois for any number, I think more than 2 years, there's a lot of retrainings you have to do, a lot of recertifications you have to take. And for the past month, I've been grilling myself. I mean, absolutely going at it hardcore, grilling myself, trying to get in there and get my recertifications taken care of. And it's grueling, absolutely grueling. And so I've been doing that, and I spend a lot of my weekends. This last weekend, I put probably 5 hours into some trainings, and then for the most part, I went to the movies. You know, I sit around on my recliner, watch some stuff on on the TV, and I made a, we went out, went to Olive Garden, went to see the new Hunger Games movie. It was pretty good. I liked it. But that's where I've been, and so that's why I didn't put anything out last week. I was just grinding, you know, the millstone. And I'm happy to say that I'm almost there. There is going to, after I get my trainings done, there's a 2-week solid that I have to do. I have to go back to the police academy for 2 more weeks. It's a refresher course. It's not the police academy per se, but it's at the police academy location. So because I was only a part-time officer, anybody, any part-time officer that in Illinois that needs, that wants to go and be a full-time officer has to go through this 2-week transition course to do that. It's kind of like a refresher to go over new laws, to go over anything that has changed, any of the laws that has changed. And there's been a lot of changes in Illinois. Trust me, there's been a lot of changes in Illinois. And I'm soaking all that in. I'm writing, been writing the last 3 days with my my FTO, my field training officer. And he's been showing me the ropes around my community and refamiliarizing me with the laws that I already knew and acquainting me with the laws that have changed. So kudos to him. He's a really good dude. I like him. He jiu-jitsu guy, and hopefully maybe someday we can get him on the show. We spend a lot of time talking, and we're like-minded, and he's into jiu-jitsu, and he's wanting to open up his own business. And so I got to give him a promo. If I ever get him on the show, we'll figure out a topic and talk about that. Maybe we can talk about the Constitution, constitutionality and law enforcement. We'll find out a good topic that we can both talk about and get that out to you guys, because it's just really exciting. But I'm almost through that, and I think when I get through that, I'll be able to work, because you can't work by yourself. In the new Illinois law, part-time officers cannot work by themselves. Only full-time officers can. Am I going to be a full-time officer? No, but once I go through this 2-week transition course, I will be certified as a full-time officer, and therefore I will be able to work by myself. So that's the plan right now. Otherwise, I have to work a shift with somebody else, and I don't have a problem working shifts with somebody else, but sometimes I can get more hours if I have that 2-week transition under my belt, because that way, if there's an opening on a shift by itself, I can take it. I'll be able to work it. And so that's my goal right now. Anyway, so there's I hear that Donald Trump is going to be on the 2024 ballot. There was a big movement to try to keep him off of the ballot, and you all know the conspiracies, the hoaxes and everything that there were trying to push through on the Don, and it didn't pan out the way that they were hoping. And unfortunately, the people who lie and steal and cheat and do what they got to do to fabricate evidence are not held accountable generally, because liberals in general are never held accountable. And I think the reason for that primarily is because they have very low standards. Nobody expects somebody with no moral standards to be held to any kind of higher standard. And that's why conservatives who value themselves as having ethics and morals are so widely held accountable for things, because they have standards, something to hold them to. And I was talking to my field training officer today, and we kind of agreed on some of that stuff, but I don't want to get too much into the weeds on that and the stuff we talked about in the field. But just know this, that not all police officers are tyrants. Not all police officers are unconstitutional. The ones that I've most of the guys I've worked with and had the privilege of working with, they value their freedom and they value your freedom. So I just want to throw that out there. And if you've never read my book Oath Takers, I talk about this kind of stuff, law enforcement and tyranny, and I have a high standard, and I would expect that anybody that is policing or sworn an oath in any kind of manner, whether you're a judge, whether you're in the military, in law enforcement, you're practicing law, if you've sworn an oath, you're an oath taker. And I would hope that you honor that oath, because just because there's laws on the book doesn't mean it's a constitutional law. There is a difference between constitutional law and unconstitutional laws. There is a difference between lawful and unlawful. So for me, what it boils down to is public safety. If you're doing something that might be against the law where you live and it's not hurting anybody and there's no potential for it to hurt anybody, I don't see a problem there. There might be some examples that you could give me that you could probably walk me through. I'm like, okay, well, I can agree with that, but off the cuffs, I can't think of anything. The line for me is public safety. For example, people like to complain about the constitutionality of driver's licenses because vehicles are not in the Constitution, they say. Well, that's true. But the Constitution also says that any rights that are not here, that are not listed here, go to the states, you see? So the states have made their own driving laws because driving is not in the Constitution. Yes, you have a right to free travel. Does it mean you can drive 90 miles an hour in a 25, something that's posted 25, 30, 55 miles an hour? It does not, because therein is the problem. There's a public safety now. If you're driving too fast for conditions, if you're driving in a zone where there's businesses and people, somebody could get hurt because you're placing some other people or the community in substantial risk of harm, it's perfectly constitutional for me to protect them. I wouldn't care personally if you're by yourself in a desert flying, you know, whatever, but I have a duty and a job to uphold the law and to protect citizens. And that's where I draw the line. In my book, Oath Takers, I talk about seatbelts. If you can argue with me how it's harmful to put the public that you don't wear a seatbelt as an adult, I'll jump on board with you. I personally don't see, if you're not wearing a seatbelt, how that can cause harm to somebody else. If you're driving at a high rate of speed and you hit something and fly through the windshield and die, that's on you. I don't see how seatbelt laws, for example, pose a public health. Now, if the state is covering your medical bill, because this is one of the reasons why I don't like state-sponsored or any kind of nanny programs for public health or free health care. I don't want to pay your medical bills. I don't want to. However, if I am paying your medical bills, let's use that for an example. If I'm paying your medical bills, let's say I'm taxed and they have a public health system and you're not wearing your seatbelt, that's my business. Because now if you're in an accident and you get hurt and I'm paying your bills, I can see then why seatbelts are important. But we don't have a public health system. We don't have free health care. When I say public health system, I'm talking about state-sponsored. I'm not talking about something, you know, the competitive stuff, which I do promote. I do promote competitive health care. But that's where I'm at on it. Anyway, so there's been a lot going on. I've been noticing a lot of craziness in the United States with the whole Palestinian-Israel climate for war that's going on over there. And I can't believe the silence that is currently going on with the left-leaning wing of the media, and which pretty much everybody, because right now I feel that the left wing and the right wing, you know, it's all the same bird, in my opinion. And I don't, they're all owned by the same groups, whatever, the same people. I can't believe that some of the pro-Palestinian protests that are happening in the United States are being allowed to happen, and it's just... It's, you know, we can see them going to the New York City suburbs or the train stations. I'm trying to remember where some of these protests happened at, and they're trying to kick down the doors, you know. How is that peaceful protest? It takes me back to the crazy days, you know, after Ferguson and all that stuff with the mostly peaceful protests where the buildings behind them are burning down, where mom and pop stores are being robbed. How is that okay? How is that mostly peaceful? And then something less devastating with people that are let into, the gates are open for people in the January 6th event, allowed into the Capitol grounds, and by and large escorted through the Capitol, fist bumping, friendly, before stuff really starts getting crazy. And we found out, we know now that there was instigators in there that were not within the civilian groups, but people who are planted to start riots, to start problems. It's been factuated, if that's even a word, I'll take credit for it. Webster, factuated. If it's not in there, I lay claim to it. If factuated means something that has been proven through fact or truth. Okay, thank you. Anyway, so I just want to take a moment here and listen to a little newsreel real quick and take it for what it's worth. This is from Fox. You know, I got problems, my own problems and nitpicks with Fox. I'm not a big fan of any news media because I think that they lie and they spin. They all do it. Some are worse than others. But let's take a second here to listen to this little news brief, because it's very interesting to me how some of this is panning out. In particular, I want to take a moment to...
Can I ask you what about...
Hold on a second, lady. Listen to this guy. His name is Elon Levy, and that's E-Y-L-O-N Levy. And this is not Fox. I'm actually not sure where this is at, but this is a lady that is interviewing... I think this is actually... Where is this at? See if I can zoom in on it, because I got it picked out on my phone. I think it's a foreign media group. But they're talking to this guy that was... He's speaking on behalf of Israel. Just listen to this real quick here, and we'll talk about it.
Children of Gaza, because more than 4,000 of them have been killed as a result of the Israeli response.
The suffering in the Gaza Strip as a result of Hamas's decision to declare war on us on October 7th is heartbreaking. None of us want to be in this situation. This isn't a war that Israel started. It's not a war that we wanted. It's not a war that we even expected. It's a war that Hamas declared on us with the October 7th massacre, with that spectacular cruelty when they invaded and tortured and mutilated children in front of their parents before executing them, burning whole families alive. And we are doing everything we can inside the Gaza Strip to get civilians out of harm's way. That's why we've been warning them for 3 weeks to get out of northern Gaza temporarily for their own safety. Okay. The Israeli army has placed over 20,000 individual phone calls urging people to leave, and today facilitating another humanitarian corridor so the people of northern Gaza can get out of the way until the fighting is over,
okay,
and we proceed to destroy the terrorists who perpetrated October 7th.
More than 10,000 people killed in Gaza. Our Taoiseach here said that what's happening looks like something approaching revenge.
No. What Israel is pursuing is its legitimate right of self-defense, as most Western...
Okay, I pause that right there, because listen, this lady, I looked it up, she's an Irish quote-unquote journalist, okay, that's interviewing this man, and she seems to... She's putting her own spin on it for whatever media organization she's representing. She's putting her own spin on it, completely forgetting what happened on October 7th. And for those of you that don't know, let me tell you that on October 7th, Palestinians, under the guise Hamas, okay, the terrorist organization, broke through into the Israel borders, into Israelites' homes, and murdered, decapitated, raped women, men, and children. Some of the most heinous, and burns a lot of them, and some of the most heinous things that I heard were pregnant women, their stomachs being cut open, and the babies being brought out and killed, the mother being decapitated and raped. Disgusting, vile evil. These people are absolute, pure evil. And if you're standing in any protest talking about pro-Palestine, shame on you. This cannot be good. This cannot be in any way spun so that people think, oh, well, Palestinians have a right to a state. They have a state. The Palestinians have their own little area there, but they decided to start a war with Israel by breaking into Israeli land, into their Israeli homes, and murdering women, children, and men. And you want to protest some kind of that Palestinian rights? Stand with Palestine? Really? This woman, this Irish lady, is completely forgetting all that. She's trying to get this man to answer for the 10,000, and these are numbers that could be, for all we know, completely fabricated, because they're talking about 10,000 people in Gaza that have been killed by the Israelis. Who do you think is reporting those numbers? Israelis? Who do you think is reporting those numbers? Think about it for a second. Where would those numbers come from inside Gaza at this time when this report was happening? It would be Hamas, the terrorist organization. I'm going to unpause it here. You listen to the rest of this. It's ridiculous. The spin she's trying to catch him up, and I got you, but it doesn't work. This guy's really sharp.
Western governments have accepted to defeat the terror organization that perpetrated October 7th so it can never do it again.
But was there not another way to do that? This response has been unprecedented. More than 10,000 people killed.
I hear and understand your concern. I wish we could send an email to Hamas and make it disappear, but unfortunately, that's not the case. It's a genocidal jihadi group that is openly vowing in English to do a second October 7th, a third, a fourth, until they kill every man, woman, child in the country. Our response is proportionate to that threat, to the threat to annihilate the Jewish people and the state of Israel. We're doing everything we can to get civilians out of harm's way. But when Hamas embeds itself within the civilian population, using them as human shields, it is recklessly endangering them. And we think that the international community is right to be outraged, and that outrage should be directed at Hamas inside Gaza and not at the army that has been doing everything it can, I would say, more than any army in the history of warfare, to get civilians out of harm's way.
Those 10,000.
I'm going to pause it right there again, because she's about ready to make me mad. She's going back again. Those 10,000. She cannot stop. She's obsessed with the 10,000. Israel at this point, what they have done since this October 7th event was first declared war, all right, giving the Palestinian people time to get out of their country, to flee. They know what's coming. And I'm not saying all Palestinians are bad, not even remotely. But Hamas is pure evil. And anybody who aligns with Hamas is pure evil. If you're supporting Hamas and protesting for Hamas, you're pure evil. And I can't help, it's not my fault if you don't know what's going on and you're just aligning with people that are evil. That's on you. You're ignorant. But this woman, and also, so time passes. Hamas drops tens of thousands of pamphlets over Gaza, telling them, evacuate. Evacuate your home, war is coming. Evacuate, trying to get them to leave. Meanwhile, Hamas is blocking the borders, not allowing anybody to flee. And then they go and they use the women and children, and the Palestinian women and children, as human shields. As if that's not enough, they house up inside of hospitals. And then they claim that Israel is bombing hospitals, which we later found out to be was a complete fabrication. All right, going back to this.
Thousand dead. They are not all Hamas militants, are they?
So, first of all, I would urge caution about quoting numbers that are being distributed by Hamas.
Well, the World Health Organization has also said it finds them reliable.
The World Health Organization is quoting Hamas. There are no independent organizations that are getting their numbers from anywhere other than the terror organization that on 7th of October beheaded...
Again, where did she think this 10,000 number was coming from? That the World Health Organization has people that are inside there take their own personal tally? No. We got idiots inside. We got Hamas terrorists that are inside Gaza feeding these numbers out. And they're saying it, and she's saying, well, the World Health Organization said, oh, yes, well, the World Health Organization, WHO, got their information from Hamas. God, she's stupid. Let's listen to more.
Burned whole families and then lied about it to the international media.
Thousands have died. Would you agree that thousands have died?
I do not know the exact number. I'm saying, as we saw just the other week when an Islamic Jihad rocket hit a hospital and Hamas immediately blamed Israel, that the world should treat anything Hamas is saying with a huge pinch of salt, because Hamas is deliberately spreading disinformation to attract international sympathy and stop Israel from exercising its legitimate right to dismantle the terror organization that perpetrated the biggest massacre of Jews since the Holocaust.
UN agencies and charities have also called for a ceasefire. However, they say the humanitarian situation on the ground is unbearable, that civilians are bearing the brunt of this. Will Israel call a ceasefire at some point soon?
No, there will be no ceasefire that leaves our hostages inside Gaza and that leaves Hamas in power. Hamas, there was a ceasefire on the 6th of October. Hamas broke it and brutally massacred 1,400 people. Hamas doesn't get to ask for a ceasefire just because it's being clobbered. There was a ceasefire, and another ceasefire now would literally let Hamas get away with murder, and it would leave it free to do it again with a military machine and with 240 hostages in Gaza. And even worse, it would send the message that democratic states that come under such a violent attack have no right to defend themselves.
So how long will it take for Israel to defend itself? How long will it take to destroy Hamas? And if Hamas were destroyed, what would Gaza look like afterwards? Who would govern it?
I'm not going to speculate on the timetable, but unfortunately, the road ahead is going to be long and it is going to be difficult. You know, for many years...
Okay, I would have said right there something different. I would have said as long as it takes. How long will it... She's like, how long will it take to I would say as long as it takes to neutralize Hamas. Period. Point blank. They cannot exist. They are a terrorist organization. They must be annihilated, wiped off the face of the planet. And they cannot exist. Because they're, like I said, pure evil. It's not even an ideology. This is evil. Continuing on.
is Israel avoided this sort of ground operation because we didn't want to see the scenes that we're seeing now. But the October 7th massacre left us no choice. Now, we're exploring several contingencies for what can happen the day after Hamas. The common denominator among all of them is that the Gaza Strip must be demilitarized so it can't be used as a base for terror attacks against Israel. What I can say is the day after Hamas, the Gaza Strip will be such that it no longer presents a security threat to the south of Israel, will give security to Israel's people, and will give new opportunities for the Palestinians.
And do you
new
believe that what Israel,
a different path.
Do you believe what Israel is now doing to the Gaza Strip, destroying infrastructure, killing thousands of people, leaving children orphaned, will make Israel a more secure state?
I wish we had another choice other than to destroy the terror organization that perpetrated the biggest massacre of Jews since the Holocaust. I wish we could ask Hamas nicely to leave us alone and they would leave us in peace. But they are openly vowing to perpetrate another October 7th again and again and again until they have destroyed our state. That was from an interview with Razi Hamad, the Hamas spokesman to Lebanese TV, on the 24th of October, a threat that he since repeated in subsequent interviews. This is the threat we are facing. A jihadi group that openly says it wants to destroy our country and murder every man, woman, and child. And in order to defend ourselves, we have to eliminate that threat. And I know the scenes in the Gaza Strip are very, very difficult to watch. And we hold Hamas entirely accountable for all civilian deaths and suffering that result from its decision to declare war against our people, sending thousands of rockets at us, okay, brutally massacring people, and embedding themselves in the most cowardly fashion among civilians.
Ilan Levy, who's spokesperson for the Israeli government, thank you so much for joining us on the...
Okay, so that's my thought on it. You can disagree all you want to, but the only disagreement I would have with this gentleman, this spokesperson for Israel, was that they must be utterly destroyed, wiped off the face of the planet. And the ones who are again and again constantly saying that Israel must cease to exist, nobody's saying anything about it. To those groups that are threatening to annihilate an entire, and we're talking about a genocide, they must be put down. Because Israel has a right to exist. And I agree with this guy. You know, they have a right to exist and they cannot be threatened. They are a sovereign country and they cannot be threatened to be annihilated or destroyed on the face of the earth. What we're seeing now, it's worse. It's more, we could argue probably just, I can agree that it's maybe as bad as the Holocaust. The numbers are not there, but the savagery is in excess. And so I'm sorry if you hear noise in the background, but I'm in a bunker. My studio is close to my washing machine. I got a load going. But that's where I'm at on that situation. So that being said, let me see, what other topic do I have here I want to talk about today? Let me see here. Let's talk about some of the illegals. We got some illegals. Now, this is a Fox News here. And it was, I guess, the subtitle, the caption on the... on the news was a flood of migrants spills across California border. And this is Biden's border crisis that we have going on here. This is yet another thing that this administration has left unchecked. So let's listen to this.
So many of these sanctuary cities now unable to keep up. In Chicago, for example, a group of people who came out of Venezuela, all the way from Venezuela with hopes of a better life. They've been living on the streets. They say, we're going back home. One of them declaring the American dream doesn't exist. Chicago Alderman Raymond Lopez with me now. Sir, how you doing? Good morning. I saw this story and I said, this is wacky. How many people are we talking about?
Chicago has seen 20,000 migrants appear on our streets since August of last year. We've got nearly 3,000 living in police stations, 800 living at O'Hare Airport, and thousands more just floating around in between shelter to shelter. And I'm sorry that they don't like our weather. I'm sorry that they feel that we're not doing enough to give them jobs, housing, vehicles, cars, food, shelter, clothing, and everything else that they were promised by social media. But the system works if you do it the right way, and declaring asylum because you need a job isn't the right way, and they're learning that reality the hard way now.
Well, the truth is our law does not offer asylum if the question is economic.
Now, the question, yeah. Are you under hardship? Are you being persecuted? Are you being religiously persecuted? I don't know how many coming across the border can check all those boxes. Anyway, number of migrants bused to Chicago out of Texas alone, per Governor Greg Abbott, as of November 11th, so a couple days ago, more than 18,400. Here's the money Illinois has spent on humanitarian aid for migrants. You're over $330 million, which, by the way, is cheap compared to New York. I'm going to read you a quote from one of the Venezuelans saying, "How many more months of living in the streets will it take? No more. It's better that I leave."
Well, I'm sorry that they feel that way, but Chicago taxpayers shouldn't be on the hook for paying these bills. And that $330 million bill, that's just what the state of Illinois is paying. The city of Chicago is committed to paying $255 million this year alone, on top of all the other amenities that all the other layers of government are providing, including our schools. It's simply not sustainable. And the fact of the matter is this: the federal government has failed in this moment to not only secure the border, to address the asylum seekers, and to provide for their well-being.
That's the point.
Since they're putting cases
years
away.
You're exactly right. That is the point. You shouldn't have to apologize for people who aren't happy with the treatment they're getting in Chicago. They made a decision to leave their homes. And unfortunately, they're still not happy. In the meantime, the people who live in your state are paying millions, if not billions of dollars eventually. You don't need to apologize.
No, I think you're absolutely correct, Bill. I think it's in my nature, just as a good Christian, to try to help people. But at the end of the day, I'm not responsible for this failure. We've seen our president and our vice president come to our city numerous times. They're hosting the Democratic National Convention here in several months, and yet they still allow us to be the guinea pig for this failed policy of allowing individuals to come here for asylum with no support, to allow sanctuary cities to be the magnet that sends them here, not only from people like Abbott, but from Democratic states as well, who have all jettisoned their sanctuary city policies while we hold steadfast to ours. Our voters have said they want enough, have had enough, and they want to vote on that topic in the city, and hopefully we can give them that chance.
I just want to read this. Governor Pritzker, the governor of Illinois, his letter to President Biden in October: "The humanitarian crisis is overwhelming our ability to provide aid to the refugee population. Unfortunately, the welcome and aid Illinois has been providing to these asylum seekers has not been matched with support by the federal government." So he's asking for more money. Just last comment, then we got to roll.
You know, the sad part is, I think many in my party are viewing the migrant crisis as their next COVID-2 money grab. You know, we've seen a lot of money come to Democratic cities to help cover the costs of COVID, and now the big $5 billion ask is now we need more money to help cover the migrant crisis. Crisis to crisis, the federal government keep asking for more money to help cover our costs. It's simply not sustainable.
Raymond Lopez, thanks for coming on.
So, several things there. First, I wrote a book called Acts of Defiance, which you're not going to find in paperback or I don't think on Kindle anymore, but it is available on Audible. What I did with that book was I took it and I re-rolled it into book one of my Tyrant, my first fiction novel called Tyrant the Rise. I rolled it into that and wrote a segue from that because it was originally wrote as a prequel. Acts of Defiance was a prequel to the Tyrant trilogy, but now it is, if you buy the paperback or Kindle, it is the same. It's all in one book now. But in that fictitious story, and I call it factual because it's fact based, in that story, we have a problem similar to this, where migrants, illegal immigrants, are flooding the United States border, and it's becoming so bad. And not only just we're assuming that all these are Venezuelans, you know, but the truth is we don't know. Because Hamas could be coming over, ISIS could be coming over, the Taliban could be coming over, any number. We know cartels are coming over for sure, but any number of thousands of these guys are probably coming over, all right, in with them. And in my story, this escalates, all right, and the bombings start. And the government does what they do best, and they take the patriots and they label them as the bad guys. So the patriots, the patriotic freedom lovers, they become the domestic terrorists, right? Because they're the good guys. And they blame all this stuff right here that the evil people are doing on the real good guys. And so the evil becomes good and the good becomes evil kind of a thing, which is biblical, by the way. And so that's just one thing I wanted to talk about right there, that this cannot go good. Not only is it a burden on the taxpayer, but this Governor Pritzker they're talking about, or the Prickster, as I call him, $330 million. My state, forked over $330 million to these guys. So I'm taking care of them. My tax dollars, and anybody else lives in Illinois, paying for these people who have been dumped off in Chicago. I disagree. I don't like them being dumped into my state because I'm bearing the burden of that. But here's what we got is people, Chicago, for example, becoming a sanctuary city or Illinois becoming a sanctuary state. And then we got these other communities, these other states who don't, I don't agree with that either. And I side with the states who don't like the sanctuary thing. Not like this anyway. There's no such thing as a bill said for sanctuary for economic reasons. All right, I can see if there's a Holocaust, a genocide, something, you know, and you need to come. I get that. These guys are coming because they're not happy with the economic system of their own country, and so they're coming over. And so now they're living on our streets, tearing up our buildings, tearing up our roads, making us look like a dump site, literally a dump site. I've seen some of these areas, and they're disgusting. They're gross. They look like tent cities, and there's garbage everywhere. It's gross, and we're bearing the burden of it financially for it, and that's not right. And so while I like the cynicism and the thought behind what some of these conservative governors are doing and saying, well, let's ship them to Illinois or Chicago, the problem with that is there's other – Illinois is not predominantly blue. It's predominantly red. But we have problems like Chicago, Cook County, Lake County, some of these other counties in Illinois that control the entire ecosystem for the state. But if you look on the map, most of Illinois is red, by and large. But Illinois, every single voting cycle goes blue for the presidential nominee. And it flip-flops back and forth for the gubernatorial races. But the second issue is not just, you know, the whole terrorism thing, but it's the burden thing. So anybody could be coming across is very insecure. And there's an economic crisis, but it's not for these migrants. If you don't like it here, go back. Nobody asked you to come anyway. There's a legal process. Please go back and do it the legal way. It might take time, but you're going to have to be patient. You're going to have to wait. And the American dream is not to come here and live free of charge, to have money given to you, get free phones, free health care. That's not the American dream. The American dream is going to America the legal way, go through the immigration process, right? And to work hard, like Americans do, at least like you should be doing, and make a living, because every person has the potential to be and do anything they want to do if you apply yourself to that. If you got the mental aptitude and you're a hard worker, you can do anything in America. That's the dream here. It's not free. It's not just to come here and be lazy and get free stuff, which is unfortunately where the United States has gone. And unfortunately, it's where this generation that is coming up right now that's going to be the next leaders of America, it's where they are. And it's a sad, sad state of affairs. But I got probably one more soundbite I want to go over, but I think I'm going to cover that after this commercial break.
What if I told you you could own land for $200 down and highly affordable monthly payments? YourCheapLand.com is your answer to bug out land, hunting, recreation, and whatever else your prepper mind can dream up. YourCheapLand.com has properties in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, Oklahoma, Arizona, Utah. Go to YourCheapLand.com, check out the properties, use the promo code PBN, and get $100 off your purchase.
Okay, welcome back. So now what I got here is a little clip from Piers Morgan. So this is Piers Morgan Uncensored, and it's exclusive. He's interviewing a man from Palestine. I guess he is former Hamas, and his name is Mossab Hassan Youssef. You can go and do some research on yourself. I'm going to play this audio clip from the Piers Morgan show, and you tell me what you think.
Do you buy into any of that? I mean, do you think that Israel has overreacted already to what happened to them? Their argument is, what is proportion when you have a terror attack like that on your people?
Look, since my childhood, and I am hearing the stories from pro-Palestine and from those who are using what's so-called the Palestinian cause, they care the least for the Palestinian children and their future. You know, I am the legitimate representative of the Palestinian children. The child within me speaks. I don't want somebody coming from London or somebody coming from the other side of the world to tell me what is the struggle of the Palestinian children. The Palestinian children, the Palestinian society has been hijacked by these criminals, and anybody who takes side, their side is participating in their crime. This is my answer to those people. And for the civilian casualties, etc., you know, first of all, Hamas is using, and it's very clearly, it's a fact that Hamas used civilians as human shields. It's a fact. Then it's a fact that Israel call and warn civilians to evacuate buildings before they strike them. But in the meantime, Hamas put roadblocks to stop civilians from evacuating to safe zones. Hamas single misfire killed hundreds of refugees taking shelter at a hospital, and they blamed Israel. What are we talking about here? Israel is a democracy. Israel is accountable. Israel is not thirsty for the Palestinian blood. In the meantime, Israel is capable of wiping out Arab capitals in seconds. Why Israel does not attempt to abuse its power? But why, when the Arabs have just a little bit of power, couple of missiles, they misuse power by launching them at civilians and kill them in their living rooms? We have a fundamental problem, and we need to stop blaming Israel. We invited this upon our heads, and the rest of the world, if they don't know the reality on the ground, it's better that they shut up.
Mossab Hassan Youssef is right. Israel could completely annihilate, lay waste to Palestine if they wanted to. They have the power. But instead, they have erred on the side of caution, and they have given everybody within the Gaza Strip access to leave. The problem is Hamas. Hamas is blocking, they're stopping the people from leaving, choosing instead to use women and children as human shields. They, to start this, on October 7th, went into Israel and started this conflict. And they have vowed to do it again and again, and we've all heard it. We can go all the way back to Yasser Arafat days in the 1980s and 90s. This has been going on for a long time. They do not want Israel, the people, to exist. They want them gone. And after that, America. So I agree with Mossab Hassan Youssef. If you're standing with them in support, then you're guilty of their atrocities. I agree. You're listening to The Rising Republic. Thank you so much for joining us.